Today we're going to discuss a prophet. He was visited by an angel. He was given visions. He was told no true religion existed on the earth, and he'd been sent to restore the long-lost faith and this one true religion. A book produced from his teachings is held by millions to be inspired by God. He claimed to be illiterate and uneducated and used this as proof that his teachings must be inspired. He claimed the Bible was lost, altered, corrupted, and unreliable. He claimed this new holy book he was about to write was the most correct and perfect book on the earth. He claimed to be the final prophet of God. He claimed he'd been persecuted because of his pure faith. He was a polygamist who had many wives. He borrowed from paganism and polytheism. Immediately after his death, a fight broke out among faithful converts as to who would succeed him. His religion has those who follow the original doctrines, who, like the founding leaders, are violent polygamists inventing revelations to justify their evil actions. They now embrace new superseding progressive revelation, replacing beliefs and practices that become inconvenient to the current prophet. But wait, I'm not talking about Islam and Muhammad. I'm talking about Joseph Smith and Mormonism. This is Eric Barger, and this is Take a Stand Radio. Stay tuned.
It's time to Take a Stand with Eric Barger. Each week at this time, author, speaker, and noted Christian apologist Eric Barger is here to help you discern the times in the light of God's Word. And now, here's Eric Barger.
Here we are once again, everybody. Eric Barger here. Take a Stand Radio is on the air. If we're talking about it here on the radio, you can certainly find more information, more detail about the issues we deal with at our website, ericbarger.com, ericbarger.com. That is certainly true with the topic I'm going to take on today. I know some of you thought I was going to talk about Islam when the intro started, but no, it's really Mormonism. And isn't it interesting? These two diverse cultures, halfway around the world from each other, over 1,000 years apart in their beginnings, in their genesis, yet Muhammad and Joseph Smith came out with so many of the same lies, so many of the same deceptions, and it is stunning when you look at it. By the way, that list that I read at the beginning of the program, I put that together with my friend Ed Decker, and you can find that at the website at ericbarger.com. I won't take a long time in setting up the topic, but I do want to remind you, not only the website, ericbarger.com, but of course I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, and the best way to find me, the best way to keep in touch with me, and to make sure you don't miss any of the radio programs or any of the newsletters and new articles, is to get our mobile app. And that app is available for Android, iPhone, iPad, and iPod. Just search for the words Eric Barger, and you'll find our mobile app in either the App Store or the Android market. Well, this radio program is now 15 months old. And this, of course, is the second week of our one-hour format. I'm glad we were able to take it from a half hour to a 1 hour each week. But there's still so much to talk about in so little time. I want to go back and kind of revisit what I did there in the intro and get us started. And this is what we're going to talk about today. What do Mormons believe about the identity of God? What do they believe about the identity of Jesus Christ? Do Mormons believe the Bible, or do they hold to the Book of Mormon in higher regard than the Bible? Is the storyline of the Book of Mormon trustworthy, historical, and in harmony with the Bible? Was the founder of Mormonism, Joseph Smith, a true prophet, or perhaps one of many false prophets that have dotted the landscape over the last 2,000 years since Christianity began? Are Mormons Christians? Or is Mormonism compatible with Christianity? That is the title of my new DVD, Are Mormons Christians? And I think that is the bottom line question. Mormons, of course, are trying to appear, at least the Mormon church, the facade, the front that they put out today, they want to appear as if they're Christians. And let me say up front, I love the Mormon people. I believe they're very sincere. That is not the issue. If sincerity counted, if that's all that counted, then certainly every Mormon out there would be accepted. It is not Mormons that I have a problem with. It is Mormonism. It's not the LDS people. It is the teaching. And, you know, many Mormons are so sincere. The vast majority of them are so sincere. They're the kind of people that you want to be friends with, the kind of people you'd want to see your kids hang out with. But that's not the issue. The issue is the belief system, Mormonism, not the Mormons. All the questions that I just asked and so much more that I'm going to address during this program come from the soundtrack of my new DVD seminar teaching, Are Mormons Christians? A Biblical Comparison of Mormon and Christian Doctrine is the subtitle. And that's really what this is all about, comparing the two belief systems to see which one is of God. Once again, I want to remind you to go to ericbarger.com. You'll find a lot of information about this topic and many related topics there at ericbarger.com. You know, Mormonism has been in the news a lot ever since Mitt Romney ran for president back in 2008 and, of course, again here in 2012. There's been a lot of discussion. And as I was going back through some of the favorites I have in my Internet Explorer and looking at those and looking at the different articles, I was reminded of a 2007 Fox News article where they compiled 21 questions about Mormon faith. Now, whoever answered that for the Mormon Church, they softballed a lot of the answers. They tried to walk around the answers. There was no follow-up questions. But there is some pretty hard questioning going on the Internet. I mean, you take a look at the way people are viewing Mormonism and the way they're investigating it. Mormons are going to have to do better than just claiming they're Christian. Even the Deseret News has stories that say the differences matter between the LDS Church and the Christian Church. Of course, Mormon.org quotes one of the prophet seers and revelators of the Mormon Church, the past president, who is Gordon B. Hinckley, who, of course, has passed away. And in their page, Are Mormons Christians? They just give such a glowing view of it. I can tell you, Joseph Smith would not be happy with what he read there because he vehemently despised being called a Christian. He rebuked people for calling them Christian. His last sermon, he made that kind of statement. And of course, you can find other websites out there. There's one called www.ourmormonschristian.org. And so there's lots of them. There's a couple of polls I want to cite. I think these are important polls. This first one came out when Romney was running for president the first time. It was taken by the Pew Research Center back in 2007, and it asked Catholics if they believed Mormons were Christians. Well, 52% of the Catholics out there said yes, 29% said no, and 19% said they didn't know. Of Protestants, 49% said Mormons were Christians, 34% said they weren't, and 17% said they didn't know. Now, of white mainline Protestants, that was a question the Pew Research poll asked, of white mainline Protestants, 62% said that Mormons were Christians, 23% said they weren't, and 15% said they didn't know. This is the one that's going to bother most of you. Of white evangelical Protestants, 40%, 4 out of every 10 people said that Mormons are Christians, 45% said they weren't, and 15% said they didn't know. What about clergy? What about people who were in the pulpit? In 2011, the Lifeway Research Group reported that 75% of the clergy they polled disagreed that Mormons were Christians. In other words, they were saying that Mormons were not Christians. 60% said they strongly disagree with the idea that Mormons are Christians. 11% said they somewhat disagree. Then we had 6% say they somewhat agree that Mormons are Christians, and 9% said they strongly agree that Mormons are Christians. I can tell you, there are evangelicals all over the landscape who believe that Mormons are Christians. And the Mormon Church has really gone out of its way to present itself as Christian, and really then to marginalize anybody who questions their Christianity as being out of step or unknowledgeable or a religious bigot. Those are things I've heard said about anybody who questions whether the Mormons are actually Christian. Now listen, folks, just because it says the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in the title does not mean that we're dealing with people who believe in the biblical Jesus. In my DVD, Are Mormons Christians?, I deal with this topic. Also on my YouTube channel, I already have a clip up there from another message that deals with this very topic. The Apostle Paul warned us about different Jesuses, different Gospels, and different spirits. The Mormon Jesus wasn't always God, but became a God. And so we're dealing with a different Jesus. And I know for some of you listening, that is hard to understand. It's hard to follow. You've not heard that ever taught before. But that's exactly what the scripture, what the Bible teaches us, that there'll be different Jesuses, different gospels, and different spirits. Just because somebody says Jesus doesn't mean they're talking about the Jesus of the Bible. And I'll say this during the message, but I want to preface our discussion by reminding you that when it comes to religious beliefs, it's not always what we have in common that counts. It's the things we can never come in agreement with, the things we can never have in common with other religions and with the practitioners and practices of those religions that we need to consider. I tweeted that recently on Twitter, and I thought that was a very important statement. It's not always what we have in common we should examine. It's what we could never have in common. So let's be careful when we call something Christian. Let's remember also that beliefs that appear to be close to authentic yet are not in reality the real thing are far more dangerous, far more deadly than beliefs such as the occult and Satanism. And I know that might take somebody aback, me saying that, but that's really what I believe because, you know, virtually all of us in the church can understand that the occult and Satanism is something people should flee from as fast as they can. But in the case of something that looks so good with people that are so nice, then they claim to be Christians. And they say they believe in Jesus Christ, and they talk a lot about God, and they talk about redemption, and they use words that we think we understand the meanings to. Let's be careful that we examine everything that comes along that claims to be a message from God to make sure it really came from God. I remember Walter Martin 101 on the cults. The first thing you do is get them to define their terms. These two systems, Christianity and Mormonism, look so much similar in so many ways, but they have so many things that can never be harmonized. They may be similar systems, but that can trap people into false beliefs in the end. And isn't that what we're trying to do as Christians, is warn people to come to Jesus, come to the only Jesus who can save anybody, and that is the Jesus who died on the cross and who rose from the grave and who now sits at the right hand of the Father, the one who was always God before time, the one who created the world and everything we understand. That's the Jesus I serve, not one who became a God along the way, as you're going to hear in the message. Well, with that as an introduction, let's get into the message. Are Mormons Christians? This is the DVD soundtrack from my new DVD, and I'll be back in a few minutes and talk to you again. Called it a cult. And that word cult is something that gets people's dander up. It's inflammatory to a lot of people. In the news media, of course, they want everybody to get along, and we're all just one big happy family. And any of those religious people who are talking about God, they must be talking about the same God. That's the way the secular news media looks at it. Well, no, we're not all talking about the same God. And it's important that we understand that other religions and other religious beliefs may not be representing the belief system that the Bible gives us. So you and I need to be people who understand how to apologize or defend our faith. Not say we're sorry about it, but be able to defend it. Religions resent it. People are confused about it. And 1 Peter 3:15 tells us it's mandatory. Be always ready to give an answer to every man that asketh you for the reason, for the hope that is in you. That word answer is the word apologia in the Greek. That's the word we use that we get the English word apologetics from. 8 times in the New Testament you see that word being used, and we are to be people always being ready to give every man an answer. See, that isn't just for the pastors or the teacher or the missionary or the evangelist or somebody like me. That's for every one of us. We're all to be able to give people answers. And to do that, you got to know what you believe and why you believe it. And you ought to have an idea of the belief system of other people around you, too. If the Jehovah's Witnesses are coming to your door regularly, if the Mormons are coming to your door regularly, well, and they do, don't they, in our culture? They certainly do in my neighborhood. Then you ought to be able to give them answers. By the way, the Jehovah's Witnesses are locals, and they have my house marked and don't come to my house anymore. After 2 or 3 visits, they decided that they didn't want to do that anymore. But the Mormons, they keep sending new kids around, and I'm just ready every time they show up. My grandkids are always so excited if they're at the house, and here come the Mormon missionaries. They come to alert me that the Mormons are up the block, and I'm getting ready and, you know, hoping they'll just stop at the house for a little chat. Well, so what's the most loving thing that we can do as believers? How should we deal with Mormonism, Jehovah's Witnesses, Muslims, all those people of other religions? What do we do?
Do we slam the door in their face? Do we tell them we don't have time? Do we become argumentative? No, we give them truth. We give them answers. We tell them the truth. A lot of people don't want to hear the truth. They'd rather do what their own thing, their own way. They really don't want to hear what the truth is. And so they would rather not deal with it. But we need to be people who are giving people answers. And confrontation isn't pretty. But as I've written on my website just recently, it's often very liberating for those who you're talking to. You know, we just got to have the belief in our hearts that Jesus has sent us to a lost and dying world to share the truth with them and then go out and do it. And you know what the number one reason that the church doesn't witness to the lost in our world is? The number one reason is we're too afraid of what they'll think of us. We get self-conscious. And that isn't going to hold up as an excuse when we stand before God someday. So we need to be people who understand what's going on around us and who spend our time realizing that our job here is to share the truth with a lost and dying world. So the reason that I'm addressing Mormonism isn't because I want to prove how wrong they are and how right I am. I've never looked at New Agers or cultists or anybody around me in such a way that I felt like I really had to put them down and show them that I knew more than they did. That's never been my reason. The reason I want to share with them is because I love them enough to tell them the truth. And that's what each one of us have to have in our hearts, that we love people enough that we won't let them go to hell without at least trying to have a conversation that might change their minds about these things. Now, if we're going to use the word cult tonight, and I'm going to use it quite a bit, and I've already used it some, then I want to define what a cult is for you. So we're going to define that here right now. A cult is a group that believes doctrines other than the central or essential doctrines of Christianity as taught by the Bible. So it's people who don't believe in things like the virgin birth or the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead or the atonement. They believe in other things, or they've added to the central doctrines of the faith, and they put things into our faith that have nothing to do with what the scripture teaches. A cult usually has a strong authoritarian structure or leadership, and certainly the Watchtower Society of Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormon Church would be a couple of great examples of that. A cult usually claims other books as inspired teaching besides the Bible. And in the case of Mormonism, you're going to see three other books in play that they believe are more inspired than the Bible. The Bible would be fourth in the thinking of Mormons. The Bible is only used when it relates to or agrees with the other teachings of Mormonism. And a cult always depends on good works for acceptance, redemption, salvation, or whatever the outcome that the cult group says is their religion, or what that religion says it's going to get someone. So it's never about what Jesus did for us. It's always about how good we can be and what we can do for God or for the cult leadership. This is extremely true in Mormonism. Even though the term Jesus Christ or the phrase or the name Jesus Christ is in the very title of their church, it's always Jesus plus my own righteousness in Mormonism. It's always Jesus plus something to them. And as you're going to see this evening, when we're talking about the Jesus of Mormonism, we're also not talking about the Jesus of the Bible. And how confusing is that for so many people in the culture around us? I want to stop and just say this to you. This is not rocket science. This is not over anybody's head in this building. We can all get this, and we need to understand it, considering that Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses probably rival one another in being the single cults or cults that we will see in our culture more than all others, and we'll run across them in our daily lives, at work, at school, in the culture, and we need to be able to have answers about it, because the confusion is how much Mormonism now has decided to appear as if it's Christian, and we're going to get into that here in the next few minutes. So, are Mormons Christians? If I believe they were, and if I believe that by testing what Mormonism teaches by the scripture, it proved out that Mormons were Christians, we wouldn't be here talking about this issue tonight. We'd be talking about something else. But how devious would it be if a religion comes along, even has the phrase or the name Jesus Christ in the title, and yet is leading people completely astray and cannot save them? How devious would that be? Isn't that the religion that the church ought to be able to give answers about? And so that's why we're talking about this. I believe Mormons are very sincere people. I believe they're very nice people. Most of them are very sincere. They're nice. They're dedicated. They're the kind of people you want to be friends with. I mean, you know, compared to a lot in our culture, there are a lot of folks there in Mormonism that have a lot of good things to offer. That's not the issue. Good person versus bad person isn't at play here, you see. This is about good people who are led astray in a false belief system that is incapable of saving them. You see, this is a criteria that we use in testing the teaching of anybody who's referred to as a prophet. And Mormonism lifts Joseph Smith up as a prophet. They believe he was a prophet above all other prophets. And so this is a criteria you can use. The foundation that a prophet uses, the authority he comes in, his leadership and the ability of his leadership, the scripture, and does he use the scripture and depend on it and it alone, and will his teaching get you to eternity? You see, that would be a criteria you could use to figure out if you want to follow someone who claims to be a prophet. So, is Joseph Smith's teaching true, or is it, as the screen says now, false? Is it false? That's the real question. And that's the question for every Mormon who will ever see the DVD we're making this evening. That's a question for each one of us. Is Mormonism true? So let's look at some of the history in Mormonism. And I think this is very apropos that we understand the teaching of Mormonism. It was founded by Joseph Smith Jr. He only lived to be 39 years of age, but he is called their prophet. He founded it in 1830 in Palmyra, New York. And as of January 1st, 2011, so just a little over a year ago as we're shooting this DVD, the LDS Church, or the Mormon Church, the Latter-day Saints, LDS, claim 14.1 million members and 27,000 congregations worldwide. In 1820, Joseph Smith claimed to begin to have visions, spiritual visions and visitations. His first vision is something that the Mormons refer to as the Grove Experience. When he was 14 years of age, he believed that a theophany took place, that he saw God in physical form and Jesus in physical form, and they appeared to him and began to speak to him and tell him that he was going to restore true religion to the world. During this first vision, God Almighty and Jesus allegedly said to him, none of the churches on the world that are established at that time were correct. So he believed that he was going to restore true religion. Now remember, nobody else is experiencing these visions with him. So we are completely taking his word that this stuff took place. And you're going to see more of that as we go along through the teaching here. In the Book of Mormon, in 1 Nephi, and that's one of the books in Mormonism, or in the Book of Mormon. So 1 Nephi and chapter 14, it says that the great and abominable church, the mother of all abominations, whose founder is the devil. I mean, that's talking about the Christian church. So if you think we're attacking Mormonism, remember that they have called what we believe as Orthodox Christians an abomination. And it says here in 1 Nephi 14:10, behold, there are saved two churches only. The one is the church of the Lamb of God. That's Mormonism to them. And the other is the church of the devil. And so that's the comparison they've made. They have laid down the gauntlet there. Joseph Smith did that. Well, Jesus himself warns us in Matthew chapter 24. Jesus warns us in Matthew 24 about false prophets, about false teachers who will appear in the end times. And I'm not going to teach on prophecy this evening, but I think that's where we are in the end of the end days. And I believe that we see Jesus teaching in Luke 21 and Matthew 24 and Paul's teaching in 1 and 2 Thessalonians. We see it happening around us right now with the rise of religious leaders such as Joseph Smith. And certainly we're in a culmination stage at the end of the end times right here.
You're listening to Eric Barger and Take a Stand Radio. Stay tuned for more. We've all heard the interviews, we've read the news reports, and we've probably encountered the missionaries at our doorstep. Now, after 30 years of research and study, Eric Barger's latest DVD addresses the daunting question, are Mormons Christians? In this biblical comparison of Mormonism and Christianity, Eric explores the beliefs and practices of Mormonism, cutting through the rhetoric and decisively answering the title question, Are Mormons Christians? Included is an overview of Mormon history, the accuracy of Mormon prophets and prophecies, the Mormon version of Jesus versus the biblical Jesus, the Mormon claim that man can become a god, and what Mormonism teaches about good works and salvation. Finally, Eric Barger lovingly discusses the real question, is Mormonism compatible with Christianity? And can the beliefs of the LDS Church redeem men's souls? Over an hour in length and packed with many visuals, quotes, and scriptures, this DVD will challenge both Mormons and Christians to examine what they believe and why they believe it. Order your copy of Eric Barger's new DVD, Are Mormons Christians?, by visiting our online store at ericbarger.com or by calling 214-289-5244.
Hi, this is Eric Barger. Did you know that Take a Stand Radio is heard across the United States and on the internet worldwide each week because someone just like you connected with how important telling the hard truth is in our culture? For 30 years, Take a Stand Ministries has existed to see the lost saved and the church changed for the glory of God. But if we're going to continue this kind of cutting-edge ministry here on the radio, we need your financial support at this pivotal time. You can donate by mail, online, or by calling our office, and I invite you, come on and take your stand with us. Get involved.
Well, 2 Corinthians chapter 11 is an important chapter if you're going to study the world of the cults. 2 Corinthians chapter 11 says, "For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ, and no marvel," Paul says here at verse 13. And he goes on to verse 14 and says, "And Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light." You know, the devil doesn't show up with horns and a pitchfork, and he doesn't appear as if he really is. He comes as an angel of light. That's how he deceives people. If Mormonism taught stuff that was so blatantly satanic that everybody could pick up on it, it would never have become a force in the religious world in the world today. You see, it's mixing some truth or stuff that sounds like it's truth with error, just enough error. And it's the old deal that if you drink arsenic a little bit each day for a long time, you will eventually die from ingesting it. You don't have to take it all at once, little by little. And that's what this is. It's spiritual arsenic. In 1823, Smith claimed to have an encounter with an angel who he said was a resurrected prophet named Moroni. Okay? The angel that you see on top of the Mormon temples around the world, the one who's the symbol of Mormonism, supposedly showed up in Joseph Smith's presence again out in the field and told him where to dig to find the golden plates or golden tablets that were buried somewhere near his home. And from those golden tablets, then he would be able to derive the true teaching of religion. After allegedly searching for 4 years, and again, we don't know how long he searched, Smith claimed to have unearthed the plates in 1827, and he said they contained the teachings of how God dealt with the ancient Israeli inhabitants of the Americas. See, they believed that the American Indians, both North, Central, and South American Indians, that in the Americas, Jesus came here after the resurrection and spoke to them because they are the descendants of Israel. If you didn't hear that, if you didn't understand that, they believe that the Indian tribes in the Americas are the descendants of Israel. And that's what the Book of Mormon says. We're going to come back and talk about that in just a few minutes. The plates and other artifacts, including a sword, a compass, a breastplate, and what Smith referred to as the Urim and the Thummim that are talked about in the Old Testament, were also allegedly buried in the hill close to his home. He began to use the Urim and the Thummim to translate the plates because the plates were done in Reformed Egyptian hieroglyphics, according to Joseph Smith. Only one little problem with that. There's never been a language known to linguists in the world as Reformed Egyptian hieroglyphics. So it's a language that Joseph Smith himself has decided that, or has told the world exists. There are no eyewitnesses to the existence of the plates. Nobody knows if he actually had the plates or not. But he finished in June or July of 1829 in the translation of the Book of Mormon that was published in early 1830. Smith, by the way, had previously earned money engaging in occult practices. He had done divination to try to find buried treasure for people. Does this at all strike a bell for what is going on here? This guy is making up his own religion as he's gone along. And for Mormons who are watching, I know how offended you are to have somebody like me say this. But you've got to be honest with yourself and look at the facts. Joseph Smith would put a stone in a white stovepipe hat, put his face to the hat to block out the light, and then he would use the stone to become a seer to see where the buried treasure was. This is an occult practice. This is divination. In 1830, Smith had a revelation to establish the city of Zion. He began the Church of Mormon, or the Mormon Church at that point, the LDS Church, and he believed he should go to Missouri. Now, he was aided in that decision to go to Missouri because he was being run out of New York at that point in time. So that had something to do with it. He was aided by the strong opposition of the teachings that he had given in New York. And when he went through Ohio, he found a Disciples of Christ pastor named Sidney Rigdon. And that congregation became part of Smith's congregation, and the two of them went together. So Rigdon bought into what Smith was saying and decided that, yes, he was a prophet of God, and he went on to double his numbers just by having that, that Disciples of Christ congregation in Ohio. But they made their way on to Missouri, and during this period, Smith was telling people he was having visitations from John the Baptist, from Peter, James, and John from the New Testament, and that they were showing him that he was going to restore the apostolic and prophetic priesthood to the world, and that he was the one to do it. And Smith was declaring at this point in time that he was the true and only Latter-day prophet, and the people who were following him were buying into it. And he believed his mission was to restore the Christian church. And so you have to understand what's going on here. Whether any of this that I've just talked about happened or not, he began to either believe it or hold to the story to a place where he finally somehow believed he was a prophet. You know, you tell a lie long enough, after a while you begin to buy into your own press. And that, I think, is what happened here. Now, this is what John Taylor, who was the third president of the Mormon Church, after Brigham Young and after Joseph Smith, this is what John Taylor said in Doctrine and Covenants, which is an inspired Mormon book, quote, he said, Joseph Smith, the prophet and the seer of the Lord, has done more, save Jesus only, for the salvation of men of this world than any other man that ever lived in it. So they believe that Joseph Smith is the second most important man or person being that's ever lived. Now, there's a lot of trouble that's happened in Mormonism, no doubt about that. Lots of trouble that's taken place through the years. While in Ohio, Smith was tarred and feathered for plotting to swindle several families that were following him out of their properties. In 1838, amidst the scandals and the debt that was being accrued because of the building of the first Mormon temple at Kirtland, Ohio, the lawsuits and the indictments over the failed illegal bank and counterfeiting operation that Smith and Sidney Rigdon were involved in, they escaped and headed toward Missouri so they wouldn't be arrested and tried for bank fraud. Not exactly what I want out of my church leaders, how about you? But that's what was going on there. And those still loyal to Joseph Smith at that point in time followed him west. Upon arriving in Missouri, the conflicts arose again. The Missouri Mormon War, which is a historic war here in the United States, broke out in August of 1838. It ended with Joseph Smith surrendering in November of that year. Smith and others, however, escaped, and they rendezvoused with their followers in Illinois, where they were able to construct the first Mormon temple, the Nauvoo Temple, at Nauvoo, Illinois. They had 12,000 people living there. They were rivaling the city of Chicago for the largest city in Illinois at that point in time. But trouble and turmoil followed Smith and the early Mormons everywhere they went. June 10, 1844, Smith was charged with destroying a printing press of some disaffected Mormons who had printed a newspaper opposing him. That's a great way to stop your opposition, by the way. And he and his brother Hiram and several others were jailed at Carthage, Illinois, in the jail there. Well, on June 27th, an angry mob of 200 people showed up at the jail. And in a hail of gunfire, both Hiram Smith and Joseph Smith died as the result. Smith was trying to escape, and they shot him on the way out. Before he was shot, obviously, Smith made this statement. I will be, to this generation, a second Muhammad, whose motto is treating for peace, was the Quran, or the Alcorn, as he says, the Quran or the sword. So shall it eventually be with us, Joseph Smith of the sword. So he's basically said to his followers, follow me all the way to death. Now, that's kind of the same stuff that we heard David Koresh say, certainly the same stuff that we saw Jim Jones do back in 1978 in Ghana, where over 900 people died of poison Kool-Aid. It's the same kind of thinking that Joseph Smith was saying here, follow me all the way. Well, in October of 1844, the Illinois Mormon War broke out. See, everywhere they went, it seems like something like this took place. The Mormons were quickly routed. They headed west. They finally settled in Utah. They were looking for a place where they could practice the religion that Joseph Smith had given to them. And the prophet leading them, the seer, the prophet, the revelator of the Mormon church at that point in time was Brigham Young, who you see pictured here, and obviously whose name appears on the famous and very large university in Utah today. There are several spin-off groups that follow Joseph Smith and that believe that polygamy was indeed mandatory. By the way, now think about this. Muhammad had a vision of an angel who told him he was going to restore true religion and he was going to have the only perfect book. Joseph Smith had the same kind of thing. They both heard that polygamy was mandatory in their religion. Think about this. You know, even in these two diverse cultures, in the Middle East in the 6th century or in America in the 18th, 19th century, think about the lie, how the lie was perpetrated. The same kind of lies given to the founder of Islam as also to the founder of Mormonism. And by the way, if you go to my website, I have a list of the likenesses of Mormonism and Islam on the website, which show you the likenesses going back and forth of how the devil has done this to people both in the Middle East and here in America through Islam and Mormonism. We have that comparison at the website at ericbarger.com.
Once again, everybody, this is Eric Barger, and this is Take a Stand Radio. You're listening to my DVD presentation, Are Mormons Christians? A Biblical Comparison of Mormon and Christian Doctrine. Now let's get back to the message.
These spin-off groups, supposedly there's 50,000 polygamous Mormons in the United States, most of them in Arizona, Utah, southern Idaho, Colorado, all through there. The Reorganized Church of Latter-day Saints is a spin-off of the LDS Church. They use a cross. You'll never see a cross inside of the Mormon Church. And the Community of Christ is what this is called now. And you'll see those churches even all over the West Coast and the East Coast of the United States. All across our country, you're going to find the Community of Christ. They number at about 250,000. All right, next. Scripturally, are Mormons Christians? Well, the Mormons believe in the Book of Mormon, a book called The Pearl of Great Price, and a book called Doctrine and Covenants. So those are the three books that they believe in. The Book of Mormon, Pearl of Great Price, and Doctrine and Covenants. And then the Bible after that. The Bible only as far as it's correctly translated is what Mormons would tell you. So the Pearl of Great Price, Doctrine and Covenants, and the Book of Mormon being the key book inside Mormonism, called by Joseph Smith the most correct of any book on earth. Now, the Book of Mormon, as we just learned, was translated from golden plates that Joseph Smith said he found at Hill Cumorah in Manchester, New York, back in 1827. It was first published in 1830. Remember how he translated it? By looking into a top hat, saying he had the Urim and the Thummim, and he had the ability, and no one else would be able to translate it from this Reformed Egyptian text. Well, DNA evidence, which I'm sure Joseph Smith never thought would ever come up. He never dreamed that this kind of thing would be available. I don't think we did when many of us here were born. I mean, I'll go back to 1951 when I was born. Nobody had ever heard about DNA at that point in time, at least not being able to do what we do with it today. DNA has disproven conclusively anything that is taught about the American Indians in the Book of Mormon. And that is the basis for Mormonism, the idea that Jesus came to our continent and he preached to the American Indians here is one of the basis of Mormonism. Now, this is a Mormon. This fellow is a Sunday school teacher. He's an anthropologist from Edmonds Community College, Edmonds, Washington. Thomas Murphy is his name. They tried to kick him out of the Mormon church for this, and there was such a cry from inside the Mormon church. The Mormons themselves stuck up for him and said, look, you cannot kick this guy out of the church. But he's making the statement that there's no possible way that the story in the Book of Mormon about the American Indians and about Jesus preaching them could be true because there's no Israeli DNA in any American, Central American, or South American Indian that has been tested. They did over 1,500 DNA tests looking for Israeli DNA. There's no Jewish blood in the American Indians. So the story of the Book of Mormon falls apart at that point in time. This is a story of a Sunday school teacher, a Mormon bishop, a fellow who had given his life to Mormonism from Canberra, Australia. And he said, I was convinced the Book of Mormon was true. And then he was forced to leave the Mormon church when he realized that the story of the Book of Mormon could not be true. Actually, factually, scientifically, couldn't be true. If you want more about this, by the way, more details about this, go to our website. We have articles about this. DNA versus the Book of Mormon is the name of a great DVD. It was put out by a Christian church in Utah, but we have information about that on the site. You can find out more. Now, I know there are people who would say, Eric Barger, these people, how can people like him, they're just picking on the Mormons. I can just hear people saying that, but remember, it's just the opposite. It is Joseph Smith who picked out the Mormon church and said that we were the whore of Babylon, said that we were following Satan. It was Joseph Smith in his very last sermon who made the statement that Christian ministers were hirelings of Satan and the people in the congregations were deceived by demons. So we're just pointing out that I think he had his facts backwards. You know, if you go back and look at the pre-1990 Mormon temple rituals, and we know what was said there because there were some secret recordings made inside the Mormon temple, we can find out that in those Mormon temple rituals, a figure named Lucifer spoke to a preacher in the temple ritual, a person playing a preacher, and the characters that was Lucifer, he's making the point that the preacher is hired by him to deceive people. That was in the pre-1990 Mormon temple ritual. Only problem was they changed the temple rituals in 1990 and they took that out. They took several very offensive things out of the temple rituals in 1990. Suddenly one day it was obvious God had just changed his mind. If you were a Mormon temple worker in 1990, suddenly from one day to the next, the rituals, even the veil in the temple, the occult symbols that had been on that veil ever since the beginning of the Mormon temples had changed. Now, in pre-1990 Mormon temple ceremonies, Mormons were told that the creeds were an abomination, the creeds of Christianity, that all the churches were wrong, the congregations were deceived, and like I just said, the ministers were hirelings of Satan. So that's the stuff that Mormonism has purported about Christianity. In the temple endowments in Mormonism, they were radically altered in 1980, like I said. Gone is the mocking of the Christian minister. But eternal marriage, the idea that two people or more, that is a man and several women, could be married in eternity, was continued as a teaching of Mormonism. Also, the idea that men can go and rule their own planets, that we can become the caretaker of a planet somewhere. Remember, Joseph Smith talked about the planet Kolob as a place where, of course, Moroni came from. I believe that's how the story goes, that Moroni came from there. So assuming that Joseph Smith had no encounter with God, no encounter with Jesus, no encounter with an angel named Moroni, he might have had that. He might have had an angel of light experience, a demonic force that appeared to him and looked like it was a good angel. But let's just say he had no encounter with God, Jesus, or Moroni. Then where did he get these ideas? He got them out of Freemasonry. They came from Freemasonry. Joseph Smith went through the temple rituals in Freemasonry, the Mormon, the Masonic Lodge, the what they would call the rituals of the Lodge. He went through those things quicker than anybody I've ever heard of. Joseph Smith in one day went up through the temple after he'd become a Master Mason at the third degree. And he grafted, are you ready? Word for word from the Freemasonic rituals, from the swearing of the secret oaths in the first degree of Freemasonry, he took word for word into the Mormon temple, and it became part of the Mormon temple ritual until 1990, when the Mormon temple rituals were changed and the temple rituals were altered radically. There is the secret sacred underwear of Mormonism. A Mormon has to wear that sacred underwear at all times. In fact, if you're going to take a shower, you literally put it around your ankle until you get out and then take it off while you're putting the other pant leg on. I don't want to try to explain that to you. You kind of get the picture, but that's what it is. You have to have that touching you all the time, including the occult symbols that are on the breast, the navel, and the left knee on the man's garment. So they have to wear those. I was crossing the Canadian border one night, and I had an occasion to go inside and talk to the customs officials on the U.S. side as I came back. And I told them that I had some DVDs and books in the car, and that they were from the United States, and I had taken them to Canada. I was bringing back what was left from a conference up there. And they said, "That's great." And as I went to leave, I got to the door, and one of them called out and said, "You don't have any secret underwear to declare, do you?" And I told them no. But we had quite a discussion about it. I went back in and talked to them that evening about Mormonism and explained the difference between Mormonism and Christianity. I don't think those guys really knew what the difference was, but it was a great conversation starter. So secret underwear can start a great conversation. You're all supposed to laugh there, but you can don't worry about it. Okay. My jokes are terrible, believe me. Time for more water. So those who were sealed in the Mormon temple ceremony are sealed in marriage for eternity. They're assured they themselves will become gods. They are taught that they will have children throughout eternity. Now, that's what you call being eternally pregnant. How many of you ladies want to sign up for that, by the way, to be eternally pregnant? Because that's what Mormonism teaches is a must. And that if you're just not good enough, ladies, then the husband you're married to doesn't have to call you up to his planet. He can leave you in spiritual limbo. And you'll only go there if you just are subservient enough to him. I really have always asked the question, in Mormonism and in Islam, I want to know where the National Organization for Women are. They ought to be protesting about both these groups because of the way, the demeaning way that they treat women. Now, this is what Joseph Fielding Smith, the 10th prophet of the church, said. Again, a relative of Joseph Smith, a descendant, Joseph Fielding Smith, the 10th prophet of the church, said this. Civil marriage makes servants in eternity. Celestial marriage makes gods in eternity. It is open to us. It is a free gift. It doesn't cost anything. Only righteousness, faith, obedience, and surely we can pay that price. You see what's going on here, folks? This is all about how good you can be. It's not about Jesus, who already paid the price for the sins of any person who would just surrender their life to him. This is about your personal righteousness and how that somehow is going to get you into eternity. It's, as I said in the beginning, as we defined what a cult is, it's Jesus plus something. It is extreme legalism, extreme works inside the Mormon church. These folks are hung up on, if I'm just good enough, if I'm just good enough. And they're warned, don't you dare have a thought about leaving Mormonism. If you leave Mormonism, you leave behind all your rewards. You immediately doom yourself if you leave. So many people who leave Mormonism are left in this almost suicidal state that they don't know what to do at that point in time. We hear this from them all the time as we counsel them, as they contact me and others. And I'm on the board of the largest counter-cult ministry to Mormonism in the world, and I hear the stories from that ministry as I work with them. It's Ed Decker and Saints Alive, if you know who that is. Ed wrote the book The God Makers. He's a former Temple Mormon, and being on Ed's board for all these years, and he's also on our ministry team too. And you look at this and you begin to understand that these people are in such bondage. Before dying in 1972, Joseph Fielding Smith said, only Temple Mormons married in the temple who carefully follow the many rules and laws of Mormonism can be saved. He made that point as the leader of the Mormon church, the prophet, seer, and revelator. So why would Mormonism want any fellowship with Christians if only then to blur the lines between them, to seduce the Christian who doesn't know any better, to seduce the church member inside Christianity, to bring them over to Mormonism? You know, when people leave the Baptist church, the one place they go to more than any other is to the Mormon church. There are more converts out of Baptist churches to Mormonism than any other religions where people switch religions than I know of. And so this is because, I believe, because there's a lack of teaching and also because of the ignorance that we see going on inside the churches. People don't want to hear about this. They want stuff that makes them feel good. They want spiritual goosebumps. You know, we need a balance, don't we? We need a balance. We need to understand this stuff, and we also need to have those times of great joy and worship and revelation from the Lord. So what about today? I've told you about the past in Mormonism. What about today? You see, it is for public acceptability and membership that Mormonism has increasingly presented themselves as Christian. Now, if you'd have said to Joseph Smith, oh, you guys are Christians, he would have wanted a street fight with you. because he denied that they were Christians. But the Mormon Church today wants to appear like a more illumined or enlightened denomination. There is one main reason, and I've already said what it is, that the LDS Church is desperately seeking to appear Christian today. It's because they have a major retention problem. Only about 30 to 35% of those people who are on the rolls in the Mormon Church actually go to the church each week. 30 to 35%. And to beat that, only one out of every four returning missionaries. And you know, in Mormonism, young people have to go out on the mission field for 2 years of their life. Originally, it was just the men. Now, it's also the gals who can do it. The men have to do it. I'm not sure if the gals have to, but both are now doing it. And only one out of every four who go out on their two-year mission actually stay in Mormonism beyond 2 years after their mission. They go to a mandatory two-year mission and come back, and only one out of four remain after 2 years. This tells them we have a major problem in retention. See, they want to change the public perception of Mormonism. They've renounced polygamy. You know, they had a vision from God. They had a word from God that came to the prophet that said that they had to give up polygamy. That's because they weren't going to allow Utah to become a state if they didn't give up polygamy. So they had a word from God to give up polygamy. And then they were going to lose their tax deduction with the IRS if they didn't allow blacks to go through the temple, dark-skinned folks to go through the temple. So that was they had a vision from God, too, that they were going to lose their IRS exemption, so they had to change that. And then the temple rituals were overhauled in 1990. And so think about this, how Mormonism has done this to gain this public acceptance. And now the missionaries are schooled with jargon that would make them sound like they're Christians. When the Mormon missionaries come to my door these days, I just ask them some questions. I ask them, tell me who you think Jesus is. And they give an answer that would sound just like you and I. Well, at least I hope it would sound like you and I, because they give you an answer that sounds like they're Christians. And then I begin to ask them, but it sounds to me like you might really know the Jesus of the Bible. And they'll say, of course we do. Jesus Christ is in the name of our church. And then I begin to explain to them how the Jesus of Mormonism is not the Jesus of Christianity. And then we find out that they're schooled with particular phrases that come right out of evangelicalism. They're schooled with this to go out in public and make these statements to make people think, at least have an understanding that maybe they are Christians. See, the tactics are working too, folks. Now, this is Gordon B. Hinckley. And Hinckley is now deceased, but he was the president, the prophet, the seer, the revelator of the Mormon Church for over 10 years. He was remembered and will always be remembered as the mainstreaming president in Mormonism. And this is what Hinckley said, very telling. He addressed the General Conference of Mormonism by saying this. He said, those who observe us say that we are moving into the mainstream of religion. We are not changing. The world's perception of us is changing. We teach the same doctrine. He knew that if he could change the church to appear to be more Christian, that the acceptance inside the church and the people who came, that is the numbers, would be changed. And he added 4.5 million people to the Mormon church during the time that he was the prophet, seer, and revelator. Who did he hire to implement Mormonism's makeover? It was this man, Robert Millett. He's a BYU dean of religious education. He is the manager, or was the manager, he's now retired from this position, but he was the manager of outreach and interfaith relations for the Mormon Church. Interfaith relations. How can we join together with people of other religions? So it was Robert Millett who was given the job, the task, by Gordon B. Hinckley to go out and express to the world that Mormonism was actually Christian. Millett wrote a book called A Different Jesus? The Christ of the Latter-day Saints. That book was published by Erdmans. That is a Christian publishing house, back in 2005. Now, Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries wrote, this book attacks the Trinity, the deity of Christ, sola scriptura, in other words, scripture only, justification by grace through faith alone, and the sovereignty of God in salvation and the finished work of the cross, Christ of the cross.
We've all heard the interviews, we've read the news reports, and we've probably encountered the missionaries at our doorstep. Now, after 30 years of research and study, Eric Barger's latest DVD addresses the daunting question, are Mormons Christians? In this biblical comparison of Mormonism and Christianity, Eric explores the beliefs and practices of Mormonism, cutting through the rhetoric and decisively answering the title question, Are Mormons Christians? Included is an overview of Mormon history, the accuracy of Mormon prophets and prophecies, the Mormon version of Jesus versus the biblical Jesus, the Mormon claim that man can become a god, and what Mormonism teaches about good works and salvation. Finally, Eric Barger lovingly discusses the real question, is Mormonism compatible with Christianity, and can the beliefs of the LDS Church redeem men's souls? Over an hour in length and packed with many visuals, quotes, and scriptures, this DVD will challenge both Mormons and Christians to examine what they believe and why they believe it. Order your copy of Eric Barger's new DVD, Are Mormons Christians, by visiting our online store at ericbarger.com or by calling 214-289-5244.
Hi, this is Eric Barger. Did you know that Take a Stand Radio is heard across the United States and on the internet worldwide each week because someone just like you connected with how important telling the hard truth is in our culture? For 30 years, Take a Stand Ministries has existed to see the lost saved and the church changed for the glory of God. But if we're going to continue this kind of cutting-edge ministry here on the radio, we need your financial support at this pivotal time. You can donate by mail, online, or by calling our office. And I invite you, come on and take your stand with us. Get involved. Well, that's just about as far as we can go this week with the message, Are Mormons Christians? But we will finish the DVD soundtrack next week. Appreciate you being with me this week, folks. And remember, in the meantime, you can go to our website, ericbarger.com, and listen to all of our radio programming, this message and all the rest. Download it. Send your friends to the website. Listen on demand yourself anytime you like, 24/7. All of our newsletters, all of our information, over 1,200 pages of documentation and information there at our website at ericbarger.com. Also, get our mobile app. It's a great way for you to listen on Android, iPad, iPod, and, of course, your iPhone. God bless you, folks. I've enjoyed being with you this week. I'll see you again next week.
This program is brought to you each week by Take a Stand Ministries, Rowlett, Texas, and is completely funded by the gifts of our friends and supporters. Please consider making a tax-deductible donation, or better yet, a monthly pledge to support the work of Take a Stand Radio. Your gifts, large or small, are appreciated and needed. Remember, our mission is to see the lost saved and the church changed by the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ. As Eric Barger enters his 30th year of discernment and apologetics ministry, we invite you to join with us. Thanks, and God bless you.